Noah, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning. Now,
my pleasure.
No, absolute pleasure to get you on. Looking at some of the reactions we've seen, what are some of the most recent reactions in, well, especially in Israel and Palestine, to the news that the U.S. Embassy would be moved to Jerusalem? The U.S. Embassy for Israel would be moved to Jerusalem.
Well, as you can imagine, the Israelis have largely celebrated the decision. It's been something that the Netanyahu government and especially the conservatives, but across the board politically in Israel, they've been pushing for some time. Moves away from the 1967 agreement and the U.S. Resolution on settlement in Palestine. Also moves away from the two-state solution, which has been on the cards since 1994, which has been really pretty much the framework in which the peace process has been sort of working, or has worked around, even though, I mean, in practice, the peace process is a long way from either the 1967 or the 1994 framework. The Palestinians are incredibly troubled by the announcement. It really, in many ways, confirms to them what I think we've all known for a long time, or it doesn't just confirm, it really exposes the extent that the US is not an honest broker in the peace process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about the, if in time, I'll talk about what that might mean in terms of the longer, in terms of the long-term process. But for the moment, I think what it does provide is a sense that, amongst other actors, that the U.S. isn't able to take that role as the central lead in promoting peace.
Mm.
I think for most of the reactions have really been that for the U.S. taking this position, or the U.S. taking this position, means that the two-state solution is no longer viable, and that's a huge change in the way that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been sort of considered or understood.
Well, it's quite interesting you say that, because I seem to recall when Donald Trump was first elected, very early in his presidency, he did make comments to the effect of that Netanyahu Bibi, as he called him, Bibi, mm-hmm. was unhappy with the two-state solution, so we might have to see what we can do. And that just alone caused massive shakeups in the yeah. Israel-Palestine debates. But a one-state solution, a unified Israel-Palestine state, how realistic is that? Switching to a one-state solution when the two-state solution's basically been the only solution on the cards for decades?
I mean, in a sense, the two-state solution was practically dead from the 1990s onwards. Some would say earlier. There was a number of Palestinian and other commentators in the 1990s who said that it's unrealistic for the two-state solution to work successfully, given the amount of settlement that the Israelis had in territories that were supposedly part of this future Palestinian state. So in a way, I guess the two-state solution hasn't really been a viable solution in itself. But the one-state solution, we're a long way from that as well. I mean, a number of commentators have said that the only way to deal with the problems in the Middle East is for, and whether it's Israel, Palestine, Syria or elsewhere, is for a shift in the way that the state and the region is understood. Now, this is a huge topic and one that we're a long way away from. But in some ways, the settlement in South Africa provides some scope for understanding how a future state or redrawing of the boundaries around some of those states might produce a different outcome. At the moment, I think the idea of unified states with homogenous national groups within them is impossible to see working in the Middle East. But that is effectively what the Israeli-Palestinian settlement is seeking to attain. But we have a huge number of Palestinians inside the boundaries of what would be a future Israeli state. And now a huge number of Israeli settlers Jewish settlers in areas that earmarked for the future Palestinian state. So for the two-state solution to work, there'd have to be a huge transfer of people across that border in both directions.
Mm.
The likelihood of that happening is, is almost, incomprehensible.
Mm. Just want to return to something you mentioned before and the role of America as a broker between Israel and Palestine. And you mentioned there, in fact, expanding it across much of the Middle East. I know it was one of the real core policies, as far as we could discern policies from Donald Trump, that America would essentially be going back a lot to its isolationist roots and not getting so involved with Middle Eastern conflicts, indeed conflicts all around the world. That hasn't really panned out, I would have to say, since Donald Trump was elected. But this kind of move, as you mentioned there, really destroys any perception that might have still been there that America would be an honest broker, a neutral broker between the two nations. Who else is actually there to kind of step into that role?
In some ways, I guess we have to think about the shifts in global politics more broadly when we think about the U.S. as the only, and it has been since 1990, the only superpower. The rise of China, I think, and a new sort of, more consolidated global South network, including countries like Brazil and Russia, means that we might be moving into, this is purely speculation at this point, but there is some sense that there is emerging a sort of tripartite divided global leadership that sees China and then this sort of, some people might refer to it as the BRICS countries and the US as competing for global leadership. I think there is some sense that the moral leadership that the US has had since the end of the Cold War and right through the Cold War, heightened with their victory, so so-called triumph of 1990, has eroded so dramatically that we can now see China emerging as an alternative moral power in global politics. Certainly, a lot of third world countries are looking towards China for moral leadership on some issues. For example, climate change. The US is no longer seen as taking moral leadership on this very important global issue.
Mm-hmm.
People look to China and the EU for other countries look to China and the EU for leadership. So, I think there is the possibility that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the peace process could emerge as an issue that China and some of the other emerging powers in the world could see an opportunity to play a part in.
Well, that would actually be absolutely astounding, I must say, Noah. I mean, obviously, China's been getting very involved with its own surrounding region, certainly very involved with developing nations such as in Africa, but to be getting involved in the Middle East as well, that would be quite a development.
Yeah, I don't see it in the immediate future, but as we see these shifts take shape over time, there is the potential for that to happen. I know China's main interest at the moment is in East Asia, as a country now with huge amount of investment in many parts of the world and trade relationships that span the globe, like the US, it's going to increasingly be interested in the politics and the regional affairs in other parts of the world.
And just as a final point, Noah, I just wanted to discuss with you Australia's reaction to all this going on. It would seem fairly reserved. It would seem fairly much the case of, well, we're an ally of America ever since Donald Trump got in. We've seen to be protecting that relationship, still endeavouring to protect that relationship without angering him too much. What would you make of Australia's, relationship with the countries involved in this conflict and the reaction we've seen so far?
I think this is a really interesting question because, in a way, I think the US's position towards Israel, Palestine, and Australia is parallel for a couple of reasons. One is that we're both settler colonial states, and Israel itself is a settler colonial state. I mean, in a way, this announcement in 2017 is sort of apt in the sense that it marks 100 years since the Balfour Declaration and the British occupation of Palestine, which really sets off the process that leads to the creation of the State of Israel in 1948. So we've got 100 years of settler colonialism in Israel, which has led to the dispossession of the Palestinian population and its disempowerment over that period. So Australia's own record, its own track record on settler colonialism and treatment of Indigenous people means that, you know, we have a history of disregarding the rights of traditional owners. So our, in a way, our support for Israel is not that unexpected or surprising. And for me, framing Australia's response in terms of its own history of colonialism is important. And if we think of the US also as a settler colonial state, we can understand its relationship with Israel as well. I mean, there are other factors, of course, and I think the US's position is a little more complicated because it was a major anti-colonial or a major proponent of anti-colonialism after World War II, at least rhetorically, because of its own history as a former British colony. For me, placing it within the context of colonialism and our own relationship to it does provide some sense of why Australia's support for Israel for a long time has been so uncritical. But also, I think there are also some fractures in that. And we're seeing that from the Greens in particular. And the ALP has held pretty fast to the 1967 UN resolution on Israel-Palestine, even though it's been quite, I think, fearful of voicing its opinion on this issue too strongly because of, I think, a sense of its own backlash, the sort of conservative backlash. But it has a large number of seats where there is a large Arab population, Arab Muslim population in Western Sydney. So, you know, the ALP's position is also very complicated on Israel-Palestine. But they've long time been supporters of the Israeli state going right back to the late 1940s. Very complicated question, but for me, colonialism and our own colonial past can't be removed from understanding our position towards Israel-Palestine.
I think some really fascinating insights, Noah. Really, actually, I do appreciate your time. Really interesting chat. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Sean. It's been good to talk to you this morning as well.